I think we can start. Our speaker today is Lorenzo Sindoni, who's going to speak about generalized GFT condensates and cosmology. Lorenzo?
Yes, thank you. So thank you everybody for being here or there. Today, as Jorge has just mentioned, I'm going to talk about some results that we obtained in a work done with Daniele Oriti, Daniele Pranzetti, and James Ryan on states that we designed to study some cosmology within group field theory. So let's start with the first slide with a general map of the kind of work that we are doing. We are essentially, what we want to do is to get the red arrow connecting GFT as a macroscopic theory of space-time to some effective cosmological description in terms of Friedmann equations, for instance. And as you see, we are following, for the time being, a rather funny path in which this is essentially is inspired by condensed matter physics reasoning. What we are doing is we proceed by identifying some special state within the full theory that is GFT, using the interpretation in terms of geometries that is allowed by the introduction of LQG-like data in the framework. We can and we do establish some specific correspondence with mini superspace sectors of GR, and then following the arrows by imposing a suitable dynamics on these states, that is, by translating the microscopic dynamics contained GFT into this for this state, into a dynamic for this state, we get to some form of effective quantum cosmology in particular. So in the next slide, I have some comments on these on what I just said, a brief reminder of what has been done and what is done in a number of papers. Here you can find some the first two papers in which we introduce these ideas, and then there are many more authored by Gianluca Calcagni, Stefan, Daniele, and myself. And by the way, more papers are coming, so the area seems to be quite active today. As I mentioned, the work that has been done so far focuses on some simple ansatz for our states in group field theory that I remind you, if in case you have never heard of it, it's a theory, it's a class of field theories on auxiliary group manifolds that is designed such a way that it can be used to define a path integral version, a discrete path integral for gravity. In this framework, I will give more details in the following. Just bring these vague ideas home for the time being. In this framework, the idea is that space-time emerges in the very same way in which hydrodynamics emerges from the collective behavior of atoms. And what we are doing with these simple condensates, with simple states that we call condensates, is to implement the idea that space-time is in fact a condensate of quanta. That is, all the quanta of our microscopic system are in the same state, occupy the same state. This is an approximation, and at this moment is just a starting point. More work is needed, of course. And in part, the work that I'm going to present addresses some of the limitations of this picture. In these particular context of the simple condensate that in practice are quotient states, what we have shown with a certain number of caveats, I would say, that you naturally get some form of effective cosmological dynamics once you are able or you put in correspondence the microscopic data that you are able still to control within these special class of states with the mini superspace of Bianchi cosmology. What we showed is that within this simple framework, we get a kind of extension of loop quantum cosmology, essentially, with non-linear generalization of loop quantum cosmology dynamics. And you might like this or not. What I think is important, what is the significance of this work is, I think, the first implementation of the identification of macroscopic degrees of freedom within states that are formulating the full quantum gravity theory without or with a limited role for a background structure. Again, here I'm just making some very general point. Stephen Gillen has already given an IRCGS seminar on the topic. I just wanted to briefly remind the previous episodes of the story. So next slide, slide number four, back to the original map. What we are doing in the work with Daniele and the others is to redo again these repeat the steps that we have already done for simple condensates for other states that we are going to construct that extend and improve the simple coherent state that we're using by introducing one important and crucial ingredient that was missing in the previous state. That was the information about the connectivity and the topology. And we do this with a simple structure that is the introduction of refinement moves within GFT. So next slide, number five, here we have a brief plan of what I'm going to talk about. I will first give you a brief, very brief preview of the basic ideas in GFT because I will need some of the technical tools to explain what we are doing. In particular, I will make some comments on the connectivity, how connectivity appears in GFT states, and therefore some comments on the relations with the loop quantum gravity and spin forms that are instrumental, essentially, for what we're going to do, to give them a specific meaning to what we're going to do. I will also give you some brief review on the condensates, on some technical points on the condensates, because they are useful for what we're going to do. And then I will show you the very simple construction that we have for generalized coherent states, essentially, that are able to implement the idea of condensation, of homogeneity, with the inclusion of information about topology via the action of refinement moves. So let's start with the a review of GFT on slide number six. Essentially, the language that I'm, or the presentation of the theory that I'm going to favor in this talk is the one of second quantization. There are several ways in which you can, there is at least another one, let's say, another way in which you can present GFT that is a functional formalism with a partition function and the related instruments. Here, I'm going to use And in the work that we are doing, we are using the second quantization language because it's very, very effective for the purposes that we have, that is for the construction of approximate states to use for our dynamics. As I said, group field theories are quantum field theories over group manifold that, as you see in the formula, can be taken to be the product of Lie groups, for instance, and you take the copies of a Lie group of your choice, for instance, SU2. And also, let me say, for the purpose of this talk, I'm using this notation that compresses a little bit size of the expression that I'm using. So instead of denoting multiplets of group elements with G1, GD every time, I will just add a label V, W, or something along these lines to denote a multiplet of them. And whenever it's needed, I will add a further label to distinguish the position of the group element within the list. Back to the interesting part, that is group field theory. The way in which the theory is formulated is in terms of a Fock space. So we have some field operators, and here we impose canonical commutation relation, if you want, that are associated to the Fock structure that you add to your Hilbert space. Here, the commutation relation is between the field and the Hermitian conjugate, and given the particular properties that we have for the field, this commutator is not just a product of Dirac deltas, but is the Dirac delta on the homogeneous space that you get by essentially taking the quotient with respect to the right action. That's the reason why you have a delta R in the formula of the group, in this case SU2, on the four or on the N copies or the D copies, I'm sorry, of SU2 itself. The reason why we ask this symmetry, this commutation relation, is coming from the fact that we are asking a particular symmetry properties of the field operator, that is the invariance of under translations from the right, diagonal translation on the right, the content of the formula that you find in this slide. And this has a specific meaning that we'll comment on later. But let me stress that at this stage, just to be fair, we don't really have a bulletproof, I would say, motivation or proof that this bosonic commutation relation is indeed fundamental. There is no reason to believe that a fermionic, for instance, commutation relation is not appropriate. The point is that we don't really have, as of now, a solid derivation of this commutation relation starting, from a canonical quantization of a system. And I want just to mention that we are working with Casey Tomlin precisely in this direction to understand a bit better where this commutation relation, where this Fock space structure is coming from.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, sure.
So in this commutation relation, you have two fields, phi, that are functions of group elements, GV, GW. And on the right-hand side, you have this integral on the group D gamma, and then you have gamma of G to the minus 1. What is gamma of G?
No, sorry. This is This is not gamma OG. It's a problem of the notation that I used. It's the parenthesis is just for the action of the minus one.
So it's just a product in the group.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Everything here. That's the important point. You have a group. You have a product on the group, and that's indeed the main protagonist in all the calculations that you have. So, why this construction? Next slide, slide number 7. Well, because what we want is a theory that when you specialize, for instance, to d equal to 4 and to g equal to the group being SU2, this theory has a fundamental quantum that is essentially a spin network vertex. That's why we want to have these translational invariants on the right. We want to have an object that has that can be represented by a vertex with a certain number of legs coming out, up to which we attach some group elements that have the interpretation, the usual interpretation of parallel transports along those lines, up to a gauge transformation. This is the reason why we have this structure. It is possible to give a different construction, introducing gauge invariants later in other places in the theory. I'm not considering this option in this case because it's not really illuminating, and I think that it's better if you just keep in mind that what we are doing is really constructing a theory of a model, if you want, whose fundamental quanta are really spin network vertices, the familiar ones, essentially. Next slide, you can do, I explain how you can do something different to give a different interpretation to this quanta that is using non-commutative Fourier transform. That is a tool that has been developed some years ago and applied extensively to group field theory rather recently, I would say, in which essentially you performing Fourier transform, you turn your formulation in terms of group elements in a formulation in terms of Lie algebra elements. So instead of having a field that is defined over some copies of SU2, group, Lie group, you have a field theory defined over a certain number of copies of SU2 Lie algebra. And this allows you to use a dual interpretation of your fundamental quantum of the theory that is a quantum tetrahedron, performing your non-commutative Fourier transform, you end up with this nice quantum tetrahedron. And the algebra elements having the natural interpretation of the bivectors associated to the faces of this tetrahedron. So this is the kinematical basic kinematical framework in which we are working essentially. And now we have to combine these ideas to get somewhere interesting. Next slide. Number 9, we start doing something interesting by gluing these fundamental quanta together. And how do we do this operation? Well, I gave you the operators that create these quanta. Of course, you can also imagine that these fundamental operators can be convoluted with wave functions, like here in the first formula, you find a very simple expression in which I create from the Fock vacuum zero GFT quantum, a single vertex with a wave function f g1, g2, g3, g4. And by controlling the properties of these wave functions, you can introduce in your state a notion of connectivity. So let's re-examine what does it mean that two vertices are connected with a vertex starting in one vertex and ending in the other one. So let's consider in the lower part of the slide on the left this very simple configuration. I have two edges, two links, if you want, emanating from the two vertices that that I'm considering, and to each of them I have associated one group element, G1 and G1 prime. The statement there is a link implied by the wave function connecting the first vertex with the other vertex, probably here I should have put some labels, let's say connecting the unprimed vertex with the primed vertex. This statement can be reformulated in the following form. We say there is a connection if the wave function depends not on G1 and G1 prime, but on a product, say G1 minus 1 G1 prime, that is indeed the parallel transport from the prime vertex to the unprime vertex. This is the way in which we proceed. We check what is the pattern of convolutions, that is, in practice, the operation that allows you to introduce this special dependence, as I show in the formula right under the picture. If you, by examining the pattern of convolutions, you can understand what is the connectivity structure implied by your state. So again, if you go on the right, here we have a slightly more complicated structure. I give you two quanta. I construct them with the wave function psi v and psi w, and then I perform convolution on the midpoints with this group element h placed at the midpoint. And by discovering this pattern, we say, this state is not just two quanta in a generic state, they are two quanta glued and forming the combinatorial structure of a dipole in this case. This is just a very, very basic example. I don't think that is particularly smart. It's just that I want to be sure that we agree on what do we mean when we say we have a state, a GFT state, and we attach to this state a graphical interpretation. We look for convolution patterns, essentially. Slide number 10, I have some remarks about points that are periodically raised, and I want to go through them just to clarify a bit the situation. So the state that the graphs that I have, that I'm attaching to my states, are not embedded in any manifold. They're just abstract graphs that are associated to my state. We are not thinking of these GFT quanta really as probes for some for the continuum geometry attached to some three-dimensional manifold, say. They are really abstract graphs. With data that are associated to them, with LQG in mind, essentially. So that's why I will speak of parallel transports and fluxes and so on and so forth. You can see that the situation is really different from LQG if you examine what happens if you introduce in your state some creation operator convoluted with a wave function that has some spin zero component. The spin zero will give you trivial contributions to the geometry. So from the point of view of the geometric observables, adding the spin zero has no importance. However, what you see, and this is one difference with RTG, having a spin zero vertex with just spin zero labels does matter, because when you do the scalar product with a state not having that spin zero vertex, you find zero, essentially. And this is because we have one guy that we don't have in RTG, that is the number operator that counts how many quanta you have in your state. So you can distinguish your states not just in terms of the geometric content, but also in terms of the number of particles that you have. Another important difference that we have with LTG is that we have bosonic statistics, and this for the quanta, and this implies that the vertices are identical particles, and in particular that the wave functions that we have are completely symmetrized with respect to the permutation of the vertices. We are forced. There is no wave function that is not symmetrized under the permutation of vertices. While in LTG, in principle, there is no reason for such a restriction. As I said, there is some role for the number operator, and this enters when you consider the scalar product of states within the Fock space. What you discover is that the fact that you have that you attach to two states, say, with the same number of particles to different graphs does not automatically imply that the states are orthogonal. You have to check what is the expression of the scalar product in terms of the wave function, and then check whether the scalar product is zero or not. But say the fact that we attach to the state to different states, different graphs, does not mean per se that they are orthogonal. What we can say is that if states contain different number of particles, they are orthogonal. Of course, this is a kind of unpleasant situation, because it means that when we want to study the geometry associated to our states, what we really should do is to study the properties of geometric operators as they are implemented, or they should be implemented in GFT. And unfortunately, this is a kind of work in progress situation, because we understand reasonably well what happens for one body operators, that is operators sampling the state, say, node by node, but we don't know what happens for operators, how to extract information from operators sampling vertices in pairs or in larger groups. So this is some area in which more work is needed. Next slide, number 11, I want just to briefly mention something about the dynamics. Dynamics will play no role in what I'm going to say, what I'm going to explain about these generalized states. We just need these kinematical notions that I've explained so far. The important point that you have to keep in mind is that we have a quantum field theory, and we have this geometrical interpretation about the data that we associate to the quanta of this field theory. And what is remarkable is that we can cook up some quantum field equation for the field theory. For instance, here I've reported one example in which you design the vertices, the kernels appearing in the interaction term in such a way, when you do perturbation theory around the Fock space, you recover the standard as a Feynman rule, as the Feynman rules, essentially the rules used to construct spin-foam amplitudes. That's the basic punchline for this slide. Again, I'm not going to talk about this aspect because it's rather out of topic, I would say. And I refer just to the literature for, or to the questions later, if you want, for more information about this. I just want to give in slide 12 just a pictorial view of what we mean, in which sense we interpret the connection between GFT and steam foams by considering simple observables in the field theory, like correlation functions of strings of operators that have a combinatorial pattern. They are convoluted together with a combinatorial pattern, for instance, of a pair of triangulations of three-dimensional surfaces. Here everything is collapsed in one dimension less, of course, for dimensional reasons, I would say. And in this sense, when we go for the computation of the correlation function, when you use perturbation theory, you discover the familiar sum over complexes that have the given boundary data specified by the convolution of field of field operators that are encoded in the correlation function, with the correct amplitudes and the correct integration over the internal variables that you would have doing spin foam models, plus the sum over all of the possibilities. Good. So let's quickly skip slide 13 because essentially let's comment on slide 13. I hope that up to now it is pretty clear what is the kind of context in which we work. And I hope that it's clear that we have to face a very specific problem, that is, what is the state that solves the quantum equation of motion for our field theory? What can we say about this state? There are several possible strategies, and we are investigating, or other persons are also investigating, other ways to access the information of containing in this equation of motion. But what I think is the bottom line of what we are doing in this particular line of research with Daniele and others here is to think of this problem as essentially a condensed matter system problem. So we have a microscopic dynamics, we have more microscopic dynamics that is specified more or less accurately, we have a kinematical intuition about what are the degrees of freedom that are described in the system. We have a quantum field theory formulation for this, and we have in particular many body theory formulation for this system. So let's try to go the condensed matter physics way, and let's try to find approximate states that are not exactly solving the equation of motion, unless we are very lucky in our search, but they so that they are built in such a way that they can be used as trial states that essentially capture what is the physics that is characterizing these models, keeping, for instance, a small number of variables active so that we can possibly do some calculations or simulation in the case in which explicit analytic calculations are not really feasible. So let's go to slide 14. Now you have all the tools to understand what we precisely what we did in the coherent state papers. In the coherent state papers, we have decided to try to use coherent states and as our trial states to replace the exact state of the theory, to get some information about the physics of GFT within a simplified context. So the states, what is interesting of these states, you might say, well, these are pretty trivial. Well, yeah, they don't have a lot of information. What they do is they are controlled just by a wave function, a one-particle wave function, sigma. What is interesting is that these states are not a state, as they are not states with a finite number of particles. They contain, they are a linear superposition of states with an arbitrary number of particles. And this is interesting because it means that although in a very simplified way they contain, at least in a very limited way, the idea that with the state we still keep part of the sum over geometries in the boundary, if you want. The naive reason for this choice is, of course, the fact that we can do calculations. They are coherent states, so they are very, very, very easy to manipulate within a field theory. But I want to stress that they are also a nice implementation of the idea that space-time might be a sort of condensate after all. We also mentioned some possible generalization of these ideas on other states, but the ideas that we were discussing were not very far away from these ones, so I won't mention them. What is the content of this state is explained in slide 15, where I have just a pictorial representation of what these guys are. These are just, these condensates are just, can be thought of as a gas of disconnected tetrahedra. We don't have a convolution pattern between the fundamental quanta, so we don't have connectivity information. What we know is that they have the same wave function. So they implement this idea of vertex or wave function homogeneity. That is, every small chunk of space has the same properties in this picture. You can also show how you can read the data encoded, the argument of the wave function in terms of the parameters of homogeneous, but in principle, anisotropic cosmology. Once you add some information about the reconstruction of the continuum geometry, if you want, from the microscopic state. And indeed, this was some kind of, I wouldn't say necessarily a weak point, but it wasn't really a procedure that was intrinsic to the state. We have to figure out a way to interpret the geometry of this state in terms of classical or classical geometries by recurring to an external reconstruction procedure that was able to provide the missing information here in the state that was the connectivity. And this is what we are doing now. We are inserting in this in the work that that I'm going to present in basically right now. We are now attempting to, and I think succeeding in introducing the connectivity and the topology information in the state. Let's go to slide 17. Let's skip 16. It is essentially what I've already said. Let's before going for our construction, let's examine what we want for our states in such a way that they represent homogeneous cosmologies. First, what are homogeneous cosmologies? They are highly symmetric geometries. They are specified and they're controlled by a very small number of parameters. So you give me the metric in a frame, you give me the isometric group, I give you everything. I give you the metric basically in every point. One way to construct states, one obvious way to construct states that do the same would be to construct graphs that are adapted to the particular isometric group that you like, that you want to represent in the theory. Maybe you want to keep wave function homogeneity to keep alive the idea that the metric is everywhere the same in the appropriate sense. And then you might want to enforce combinatorial regularity of the graph so that all these ingredients match together to reproduce a state that is microscopically homogeneous. This is naturally a possibility. I'm not excluding it. I just want to remark that these would require essentially the limitation of states that can be described by regular tessellations. So this means that the class of states that you would construct in this way is really limited. Another option that comes naturally to our mind when we try to construct states is that we can relax wave function homogeneity. So we don't ask that every vertex has the same wave function. We might want to sacrifice also combinatorial regularity. We might want to introduce some more complicated graph, but still keeping homogeneity homogeneity and the presence of a symmetry group into the game by considering situations that are coming, for instance, from a sampling, random samplings of homogeneous spaces. What is the problem in this case is that you really add a lot of microscopic data to something that is supposed to be very, very simple. So you have to specify what is exactly the combinatorial structure of the state and what are the data that you attach to the state vertex by vertex. And this would be unavoidable for a generic situation, but it is clearly a lot of work to be done for something that has to be described by, at the end of the day, the few parameters that are required for a cosmological geometry. Both these approaches, as you see here, are for sure viable. They are not forbidden by any principle. The only thing that makes them special is the fact that they attempt to translate directly macroscopic homogeneity into microscopic homogeneity, and perhaps in a too restricted way. And this is also obviously, from the point of view of concrete calculation, a problem, because if you have to write explicitly states containing a large number of quanta, you make any calculation essentially impossible, unless you have some smart organizational principle. So slide 18, I explain what are the requirements that we ask and why we speak of homogeneous cosmologies for our trial states. So first organizational principle is that our states have to involve just a small number of degrees of freedom. We don't want to have the full group field theory with us. We just want to have a smaller number of data. especially when we consider combinatorics, the combinatorial structure. What we want, second, is that this state should not really pinpoint a special triangulation or a special graph. They should want to have something that we partially had also for simple condensate, that is a generic superposition of triangulation. Then, third point, we don't really require that each of the members of the superposition is a homogeneous state in itself. What we want is a state that is macroscopically homogeneous. We don't require that it is microscopically for each member of the linear superposition of states that we are considering. What we require, however, is the condensate condition that we have, that is every vertex, every chunk of space has the same wave function. And this is because what we want is a state that is parametrized by a small number of data, that is the number of data that are specified by the macroscopic configuration in the continuum. As I said, at this stage we are asking only kinematical questions. We can say something about the kinematics. We are not touching at all the issue of the dynamics. I want to stress it again in case it's not already clear. Because there are a lot of additional questions might be asked. So let's go to 19, where I give you the very basic recipe that we have. So, as I said, we keep wave function homogeneity as a basic ingredient because it has a natural interpretation in terms of, gives us the naturally direct interpretation of our states in terms of homogeneous cosmologies. In a hydrodynamic sense, I would say, because the wave function that we attach to every single vertex that will appear in our state, whatever the graph that we are considering is, controls directly the same data that are contained in the macroscopic state. So it's really a hydrodynamic object rather than a microscopic object. What we do, it's very easy at the end of the day, is that we define a modular construction, I would say, that mimics what we did, what we have in the case of the simple condensate, because what we do is we construct the state by replication of the same basic units of graph, including the gluing. This is the real novelty of this work, that we keep the modularity of the construction, but now we are able to set things up in such a way that we are able to glue the various tetrahedra or the various spin network vertices that are appearing in the state. And basically, that's the story. You start from the way in which we construct the state is we start from a seed state. You can think of it as the simplest triangulation of the manifold that you have in mind. And then you act with a refinement move that I'm going to define in the next slide, so that you grow and you generate a sum over all or a subset of triangulations that are with the same topology and with the same wave function attached to the vertex. So let's go in on slide 20 with the implementation. So far, a lot of words and little mathematics. It turns out that the mathematics is pretty easy. So let's start from the first ingredient, wave function homogeneity. What we want to have is a state that is built with spin network vertices having attached to them the same wave function. So the obvious thing is instead of using the fundamental creation operator, phi dagger in this case, we use dressed operators, sigma hat dagger, that depends on this element HV that I'm going to explain in a few seconds. That is essentially the convolution of this wave function sigma bar with the fundamental field operator. Now, we, in order to store the correct geometric data that we want for cosmology, we ask that sigma, this wave function sigma, has this symmetry on the left, on the right, that has already been discussed in the work with Stefan, that essentially allows us to store the, if you go back to the interpretation of the elementary quantum in terms of tetrahedron, the implementation of the gauge invariance on the right essentially amounts to the closure condition of the tetrahedron. The implementation of the gauge invariance on the left amounts to the storage of the data that are invariant under global rotation of the tetrahedron, essentially only the edge lengths. In this little formula that you find at the end of the slide, you have an example of how you would construct a state S3 with the appropriate gluing of five quanta with wave function sigma. And you see that from this expression that these group element H that are parametrizing the field operator sigma hat are the group elements that are used for the convolution. And this is the very important, very simple but very important tool, because now we can very easily proceed to the construction of objects that are connected. Slide 21.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
So this long formula at the bottom of 20 is a little bit strange because you change the notation. The H's now have a vertex and a number as subindex.
Because, yes. Because there are several vertices, and this was the most, compact way of writing things. So V1, V2, V3, V4, and V5 are the vertices. And then V1 means the first edge emanating from the vertex 1.
But I'm confused. I thought the H's were not associated with edges.
Yeah, H is associated to the... let's go to the picture on the left of this formula. So H lives on the red dot.
Yes.
So H is, HB11 is the group element that lives at the midpoint coming from, vertex V1.
Along line 1.
Yes.
Okay.
You start from vertex 1, you go with GV11 to the midpoint where you have HB11. That is used for the convolution with the other edge coming from another vertex.
Okay.
Okay? HV54, essentially. This is the formula. Okay, so let me speed up a bit. We want to use these field operators to construct refinement moves. Refinement moves have to be to satisfy very simple conditions. First, they have to be topology preserving so that we are sure that we are still discussing a state that is attached to a specific geometry, not from a different one, And the other condition is that it has to respect this vertex homogeneity. Now, it is pretty obvious from what I said that natural candidates for these refinement moves are operatorial implementation of the partner moves. So operators that are encoding the partner moves. What if you do a little bit of calculations, you discover that in fact you are just a 1-4 partner move that you want that you can play with, because essentially you cannot work with operators that are locally destroying pairs or triples of tetrahedra. This is a limitation. We have in equation in slide 22 the equation for this refinement move. If you want, we can define an equation for the refinement move by asking that the action of the operator M, that is our move, will isolate from a state associated to a graph gamma vertex V, and will destroy it and recreate a different set of tetrahedra with the appropriate combinatorics such that the topology is unchanged. So you have this equation for the commutator. And slide 23, we have a solution. So in general, this equation has an unknown space of solutions. We don't have a list of all the possible solutions. But if we ask a special condition on the wave function sigma that amounts to the requirement that the commutation relation between the sigma hat operators is the one written in this slide, then the expression M for M given in the formula does the job. So slide 24, it's basically the end of the story for the construction. We want or we can generate a family of states that implement all the desiderata that we said, by starting with the state seed and acting on this seed with a function of this refinement move. This function is arbitrary and in practice amounts to the specific, the choice of F amounts to the specification of the coefficients that you have in the linear superposition of the state that you will obtain by considering all the possible, the possible ways in which the refinement move that I just said can be acting on the seed state. So given the fact that we have a limited amount of refinement move, we cannot, I'm not claiming that we are exploring ergodically the space of triangulation. There are still restricted states, but they these states are sufficient for our purposes. I just want to remark that in the paper that is on the archive now, you will find much more than what I just explained. We also examine the case of spherical symmetry and states with boundaries, but there is a lot more of construction that has to be added to the basic GFT, and you cannot really use this simplification framework, and there are a lot of complications that, however, are just making the same result just more or less transparent, if you want. This is sufficient for our purposes. Some remarks, 25, given that we are late, I'll try to give you the very basic information. There is still a large amount of information that you can specify by choosing with some basic principle that we still do not know. This function f of m, we started with the exponential just for simplicity reasons, but there is no reason why we should limit ourselves to that. We don't know if we can really check, because of the absence of geometric operators that are two body or more, we cannot check if there is the action of some discrete version of isometric groups on these states, so that we can say, yeah, these states are indeed homogeneous in the sense of the action of a symmetric group. What we have is wave function homogeneity. And a final but rather annoying feature even though it's not really problematic at the end of the day, is that these states are not really normalizable. They are distributional. They are similar to the states that you construct, essentially with Dirac deltas as wave functions. So just to make a long story short, in slide 26, you see that this is a problem, of course, if you want to compute the expectation values of operators, right? Because the states are not normalizable. However, you can see by a little bit of algebra that if you compute the expectation value of a one-body operator, like a hat here, what you discover is that given the special structure of the state, you have the formula in the lower part of the slide. The expectation value is determined, or the matrix element, better, of the operator, or the diagonal matrix element of this operator, in the kind of states that we are playing with, is just proportional to the same same matrix element for the number operator now times this expression that is highlighted there. That is indeed the statement that the wave function sigma is storing the one-body geometric information in our state. So if you want to compute the flux, you have to choose a certain kernel for representing the flux, certain choice of A, GV, GW, corresponds to the flux operator, and this expression tells you what is the flux operator attached to that, the value or the expectation value attached to that flux operator. There is a different, this expression is almost the same that you have in the case of simple condensates. However, there is an important difference. You have this integration over HV that I've highlighted here. That is the net effect of the fact that these states are not exactly even states. So there is the fact that we are gluing these quanta together has an impact on the expectation values. Okay, let me go in slide 27 to the conclusions. What we have done is to extend the class of states that are able to encode a notion of homogeneity, and therefore a notion of the degrees of freedom that we might want to use to study cosmological situations. However, with the important inclusion of some structure that is the correlation between the quanta that was absent in the Euclidean state. And I hope that you realize that the construction is really easy once you understand how to implement refinement moves. So if tomorrow you come up with a different refinement move that still has the desired quantity, you can find your own state. What is unexpected, I think, is that we can still do some simple calculations with these states, despite the fact that there is a lot more structure than a simple Euclidean state. I wasn't expecting, for instance, the formula that I discussed in the previous slide. Despite the fact that it's obvious that the wave function sigma contains the geometric information, it's not obvious that you are able to extract easily that information. So we are lucky. I already mentioned the fact that the same procedure can be generalized to different situations, and we are currently working on this, spherical symmetry in particular, presence of boundaries, and situations along those lines. And I think that the take-at-home lesson for all this work is really that this is another step to do real hydrodynamics of GFT, and I will close with this. Thank you.
questions. So there seems to be a lot of freedom here. At what level are you imposing the equations of motion of general relativity here?
Okay, yes, indeed. There is a lot of freedom, as I said. Essentially, the wave function sigma is free. The refinement move, okay, we restricted ourselves to partner moves just for simplicity, but you can do different things. And the other thing is the function f of m that I was writing in slide 24. All these are free parameters for the state, exactly as the wave function sigma was a free parameter for the coherent state that we're using. The point is that these parameters should be fixed by what? By the equation of motion. So in the case of coherent states, what we were finding was by imposing, I have a backup slide on this, 29. In the case of this is coming from a different talk, so that it was just for convenience because I was expecting some comment on this. In the case of a simple coherent state, what you have is that you have some Schwinger-Dyson equation for the field theory, and you try to impose the Schwinger-Dyson equation on average. So in the previous work, we have just focused on the simplest of the Schwinger-Dyson equation, that is the classical field equation, essentially. And that is an equation for sigma, for the wave function. Now, the point is that in the case of coherent states, that's the only parameter that you need to fix. In our case, we have more freedom. We can choose the way in which we include the different refinements in our state, because we are not asking that our state is a coherent state. So yes, there is a lot of freedom, but that's exactly the kind of freedom that then you want to be constrained by the equation of motion. Let me just remark that it might be possible, I don't know, that indeed, due to the fact that we have this extra function, we might have to ask for more Schwinger-Dyson equations to be satisfied at the same time, because we have not just a wave function, but another function. So it might be more complicated, but conceptually is the same. Also, the kind of results will be the same, will be some nonlinear relation, nonlinear restriction of the wave function from the general point of view. Then,
thank you.
You're welcome.
More questions? Okay, let's thank Lorenzo again.
What was the show?